This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And this is Doug Pollard here bringing it to you with the able assistance this week of Kath Pope. Now, a recent win in the High Court could herald some momentous changes for that oft-overlooked letter in GLBTI, the T, transgender people. And Sally Goldner from Transgender Victoria joins us now to explain what that's all about. Good afternoon, Sally.
Hi, Doug, and hi, Kath.
Sal, how are you?
Good, very good.
Now, you had a big win in the High Court. Can you just explain briefly what the case was all about?
Yep, two trans men from Western Australia, known as AH and AB, challenged the birth certificate requirements in their state as to what they actually meant. It went through the various tribunal and court levels, including the West Australian Supreme Court, went up to the High Court, which has now found that you do not, and I'll quote, one part of their judgment has now said that you do not have to have, quote, every procedure to remove every vestige of the gender which the person isn't. And so it's been a very big win that gets away from what I'll call rigid binaries of sex and gender that have often restricted transgender people.
Right. So this means you don't if you're a trans man, you don't have to have a hysterectomy.
That's correct.
You used to have before in order to be fully recognised.
Yeah, that's right. And there was some concern that the West Australian Supreme Court judgment might have actually made things even worse by requiring trans men to add a phallus, which is a risky and expensive operation that is also not even available in Australia.
No, and with very limited successes, from what I understand.
That's right, yeah.
As well.
You know, there are very limited success and often with risk as well, and not covered by Medicare, which can leave the trans men, if that was the case, $100,000 out of pocket.
Yeah, it also goes the other way too, doesn't it? Because a trans woman, for example, although we tend to think it's relatively, and I say relatively in very large inverted commas, easier to do corrective surgery going in that direction, that too is full of risks.
It's less risk, I'd be fair and say, that the procedure to remove the phallus create in the vagina is, I'd almost say, relatively standardised. There can be some risks from it, of complications afterwards, but not nearly as huge. So,
right.
But still, you know, it's not something that everyone needs is the critical issue.
Yeah. Kathy.
It's just so important because this decision has really removed an economic barrier faced by the trans community that is so so prohibitive in their fight to be recognised under law by their gender identity. So this is a massive win for you. The trans community has had a few wins of late, Sal. How are you lobbying? How's this happening? You know,
somebody must be being very persuasive.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, let's put, as you said, three wins that have happened in Australia. Doug and I spoke 4 weeks ago, and that's just been something that's been...
I'm sorry, Sally, we're losing you. The signal is breaking up, rather.
All right, take two.
can we try again?
Yep, still
okay.
Here.
Yes, I can.
So you were saying
you
have had the trans community has about, well, there's three very public wins that you've had recently.
We had a hat trick in the 4 weeks ago, Doug and I spoke about the passports win, and that came about through consistent and persistent action. And it was also a two-way street. We understand that Kevin Rudd was very keen to do whatever he could within foreign affairs to remove discrimination. So for GLBTI people, and saw the passport issue as a problem. There was then the win that been a bit less noticed of Connor Montgomery in New South Wales, a trans man who has managed to get his birth certificate changed without the sort of surgery. So it's a similar sort of thing that leads then to the High Court decision, which has just been the really amazing, persistent efforts of AH and AB. I mean, I tip my hat to those sorts of people who can go through those sorts of tribunal and court processes. They must be very draining and possibly a bit scary. So it's been a lot of consistent effort, for sure.
Now, this win in the High Court, how does that affect the situation nationally? Does this only affect Western Australia, or does this have national application?
I think it would have, and in my best non-lawyer opinion, I believe it would, because Victoria uses the word reproductive organs, which is what is used in Western Australia and virtually all the other states and territories. So it now means that all the states and territories have to, you know, think how they apply their laws as it stands. But we believe that, the simplest answer would be to get uniform laws across all 8 states and territories in line with the Sex Files report of 2.5 years ago that make it clear that surgery is not, is not the issue. I think that would be the simplest thing that could come out of this.
Yeah. And there's another story that was up online this week about a transgender woman, I think in Brisbane, who a neighbour threatened to burn her house down and finally managed to get compensation under the Anti-Discrimination Act. I think that's probably a first there too, isn't it?
It's certainly one of the biggest results on that, we'll say, that sort of...
You've got it.
We lost her. But what's truly amazing about this is Western Australia, which is... one of the most conservative states supposedly is. And, you know, Colin Barnett's the premier over there that's never really been a friend of our community in the past. It's just extraordinary that sort of change started in WA, of all things.
It's really bizarre that this should happen. We seem to have lost Sally there. We were having trouble with the signal anyway. I don't know what tunnel she was hiding in or whatever, but the signal came and went. But I think we've managed to get Sally back again. Welcome back, Sally.
Yeah. Look, the West Australian situation you were talking about, I think it's where the laws probably are more extreme that leads to these sorts of challenges.
Mm.
And so then you have the sort of leapfrog effect where the worst laws start to get reformed, and one would hope that possibly another benefit of the West Australian situation, their protection, equal opportunity protection for trans people only covers people who have had changed their birth certificate. Which means people have to walk through the proverbial metaphorical minefield to get to that protection. So you'd hope that they might move forward on that as well and, get to where there's, let's say, full coverage of what I'll call the spectrum of transgender people as there is in Victoria or Queensland.
And so I guess if I was a young trans person, this decision would, I guess it would make me feel more comfortable about exploring my gender identity, and because I haven't got that this is going to have to end in surgery before I'm acknowledged and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, thousands of dollars and, you know, surgery that can't be even done here. I mean, you remove all that and it makes it that road just a little less steep for a young person to that hill to climb kind of thing.
Oh, I'd agree with that. And also for people of all ages, I think that the, we'll say, restrictive interpretation of the laws in the past has meant that some people have probably had surgery where they didn't really need or want it. So that, as you said earlier about the economic barriers, the thing is that we still need to make sure people who do need that surgery don't have any economic barriers. And, one of the things that we would like to see next on our wish list would be to get full Medicare coverage of all the trans procedures.
Yeah, this is something that's also going to come into the review the federal government is conducting into all anti-discrimination legislation, isn't it? I mean, this, we hope we're going to get much more coverage under that for sexual orientation, gender identity issues generally.
That's it, yeah, the consolidation process where there is really no coverage at a federal level. And that could be another way around the situation where the states and territories have, we'll say, different degrees of equal opportunity coverage for the trans spectrum. But if there's a federal law that overrides, let's say, the missing bits or bad bits of state and territory law but doesn't weaken anything, that would be a really good thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, certainly the trans community, there's a few of us from around the country who are going to put in a joint submission on that for sure.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon, Sally, and congratulations on another win.
And it's good to get them.
It's good to get them because they've been a long time coming.
Yeah, could you just email me your lobbying tricks, Sal?
if I can bottle them and market them, rest assured we will.
Okay, thanks very much, Sally.
Thanks, Kat. Bye.
Now, up next, your local doctor is often the first place you go when something's wrong with you. And not just physical ailments, but mental health problems too. But are they equipped to deal with the special needs of GLBTI people? We're about to find out.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.